Welcome to episode 166 of the Daniel Yoris podcast with today's guest, Troy Taylor. Let's go. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. Joined here today by Troy Taylor. Troy is the Senior Director of Performance Innovation at Tonal. Troy, thanks for being here. Appreciate you.
I appreciate you having me on. Thanks for having me on, Daniel.
Before we get into many other things and describing what you do and all about Tonal and all of these things, a sport performance world question for you. What are your thoughts or what do you make of this attempt at the enhanced Olympics that is being trying to be pushed in a couple of years' time?
Yeah, I've been reading about that recently. I'm probably conflicted about it, like, as we'll probably get into. I spent 20 years of my career working with some of the best athletes in the world, natural athletes, never had an athlete that tested positive around that. And I've seen the challenges of competing potentially against enhanced athletes that are skirting the system and the kind of challenges with doing that. And so I'm conflicted because on one side, I'm not a big thing. Like, people can do their own stuff. You want to take drugs and hormones and enhance yourself, that's great. But I believe in playing to the rules of the environment that you're in. And so from that kind of sense, I don't have an issue with it. If that gives them an outlet and people to do that, and it allows people that don't want to compete like that to compete naturally in the Olympics, whether that actually happens or not, I think is probably questionable. And people will try and play both games. I probably land on the side of, if you do that, you probably shouldn't compete as a natural athlete again. I'm not an expert in hormone biology and how long the lasting effects of steroids are, but we've seen, I think, time and time again that they can have some pretty dramatic effects for the rest of your career. So I feel it's like a one-way door. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe as it comes together, I'll feel differently, but I'm a little conflicted on it. How about yourself?
Yeah, no, I think I'd agree with that sentiment. I mean, I think that the performance enhancing drugs would certainly be more effective in certain sports versus others. And probably, like in your world, ski and snowboard, probably less so than maybe other sports. Not zero, obviously. No one would ever argue that they don't work, but sports where there's a little bit more technique or flair or style involved, going to have less of effect than track and field, for example. Track and field, it's going to have 100% effectiveness. I think the other side is, and I'll let you go in a second here, is I think we'll start to see or find out that more athletes than we think are enhanced and just beating the tests. And that will surprise some people. But I think it'll be interesting. I think, like you said, it will be a good outlet for those athletes who want to do that. I also agree that they probably shouldn't. Like, once you go there, once you openly say that I'm doing this and I'm whatever, then there's no coming back from that, because there has to be some lasting effects, or there's got to be something going on there. So it's not fair for the people who are truly natural and want to compete naturally, but also to each their own. Like, do whatever you want, just follow the rules of the sport.
Yeah, I tend to agree.
Yeah. So what is your background with the Olympics, with ski and snowboard? Tell us about, like, how you got into the whole fitness industry and what your background is with it.
Yeah, absolutely. So the accent is from Britain. That's like sort of the confused, but I've lived in Britain, Canada, and the US. I've actually worked for all three Olympic teams on summer and winter side. So not just ski and snowboard, but on track and field and rowing, some other sports. But grew up in England, average athlete, nothing particularly special, the standard kind of story. Didn't know what I wanted to do. So went and did sports science, exercise physiology as an undergrad degree. Kind of liked it. Thought I'd go into personal training, tried that for a year. Wasn't really for me. I kind of wanted something more. So I went and did a master's degree in this sort of same topic area. And when I was there, I started volunteering for the British Olympic swim team. This was in the lead up to probably Athens Olympics. Just to date myself. And so I did that, and collecting lactates, running heart rates, running some strength and conditioning sessions. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was cool, and like, wasn't a particularly glamorous job. I think I did my master's thesis on hydration status. Anyone knows that you measure hydration status mainly via urine, so not exactly luxurious. But I really enjoyed it. I love working with athletes, love working with coaches. And I was fortunate to get a job straight out of that master's degree program, really based on that experience, working with a university team, some professional sports teams in England, some EPL teams, and some Olympic athletes. And then over the next 15-ish years, was fortunate, yeah, I think something like 7 Olympic Games, 500 Olympic medal, 500 Olympians, 50 Olympic medalists or so. Didn't play a huge role in any of them. I would state like 1-2%, hopefully, if I did my well, but was a sports scientist, a strength and conditioning coach, then later a director of sports science and a high performance director. Just really enjoyed working with athletes, teams, and really with other practitioners, other strength and conditioning coaches, strength and conditioning, exercise phys, nutrition, psychology, and then medical kind of professionals to really, you know, just bring a holistic approach to kind of supporting athletes. And so did that until about 3 years ago, and then made the switch over to consumer fitness, which was not a career that I necessarily planned. But it was around 2015, I came back to the US as the high performance director for US Ski and Snowboard. And like a lot of my job is to seek out new innovations, right? I took it, how do I help at that time, US athletes get onto the top step of the podium. And in Britain and in Canada, I know where you are, Daniel, there's lots of government funded Own the Podium or UK Sport that kind of fund these innovation projects. It doesn't really exist in the same way in the US. It's a lot more sort of philanthropy, and sort of fundraising. But what the US does have is Silicon Valley. And so I started working with these startups of how I can get competitive advantage, ran a bunch of different projects around. I think we were the first team in the world to use virtual reality. Well, we filmed the 2018 Olympic downhill course in full 360 video and VR headsets. Wow. Ran projects on brain stimulation and computational fluid dynamics, all these different technology projects. And I really enjoyed working in the startup world. And so I was like, oh, sports and startup. And so, yeah, it was probably 3 years ago, Tonal, who I was aware of, but sort of came and said, hey, would you like to maybe come over and sort of join this performance innovation team we're doing? And I was like, it was a great mix of sort of startup kind of expertise that I'd kind of been building over the last few years. My background in sport, but in understanding human performance, really, and an opportunity to scale that. So yeah, that's the relatively short story of the long version.
I mean, I think it all makes sense and kind of blends together nicely. Maybe not so much on the surface, but when we think about it, high level sport is effectively problem solving. We're trying to figure out, okay, we have an athlete, how do we make them bigger, faster, stronger, better at their sport and keep them injury free? Like that is problem solving, right? And same as a startup, in be it fitness or any other industry, like you're trying to solve a problem effectively, or make money, I guess, is one of the problems, but like you're trying to solve.
That's a problem for startups generally, but no, definitely a lot of transferable skills.
Yeah. And then even with Tonal, one thing that strikes me as interesting and a big positive of it versus a lot of other, as we would say, consumer fitness products, is a lot of consumer fitness products for people like me who are maybe more purists in exercise and fitness is like, all right, another booty hit workout. Like, okay, we get it. You called something, you know, you called the fat burning zone. You've made up a new phrase of something that doesn't exist. Like there's no innovation. There's no technology. There's nothing new here other than branding and marketing. And that's all fine and good. It gets people off the couch and moving. Cool. But Tonal actually has some technology to it, is using a lot of what we could say high level fitness apparatus from accommodating resistance. And we'll define that and get into kind of what that is, which is something that like high level athletes use. And now people can use this in their home for like relatively simple and like a very accessible way. And so that must have been super interesting. And probably, correct me if I'm wrong, the thing that really brought you towards that is like, hey, if I'm going into consumer fitness, I'm not doing like HIIT workouts with my headband and, you know, neon shorts. Like I'm going to do something real.
Yeah, no, you nailed it. That's exactly spot on. Like, if I think through my career, I probably spent low tens of millions of dollars on various different training equipment for various different organizations. Kitted out Olympic training centers, you know, put in the latest and greatest. I wasted some of that, unfortunately, as things come and go. But I somewhat tried everything. There wasn't much out there that I hadn't tried. And to be honest, if you told me a consumer fitness device, and when Tonal first, I knew a board member, a board advisor who worked at Tonal. That's how I first got introduced to the company. And he said, hey, you should get this, one of these for your Olympic training center. And I was like, I was like, I want to humor him. He's a board member. He, you know, funds my system. But like consumer fitness, seriously, that's not what we're about. And so I actually sent a staff member, this was back in 2019, to LA, to the to the, I think the one retail store they had at the time, or we had at the time, and to try it. And I'm like, just like, is this worthwhile? Because I'll tell him no if it's not. And he came back and he raved about it. And I was like, huh, I was not expecting that. I'd never pulled on a tone. I didn't know. And he's like, he's a pretty high level strength coach. He's been around for a while. I'm like, he knows his stuff. And that was there. So we ended up getting one for the training center, actually just as the pandemic broke out, and our training center closed. So I send it to Michaela Schifrin's house. So Michaela Schifrin was the first sort of US skin snowboard. She's a very decorated multi-time Olympic medalist, most winning athlete in skiing ever, I think. So pretty decent. but I tried it with hers, and I'm like, wow, this is really good. I've tried all this different equipment, and this piece of home fitness equipment is arguably as good or better than pretty much anything else in my training center. That's kind of cool, because normally it's like this top-down trickle effect, right? Yeah. You prove it out in elite sport, we get something kind of fancy, and then you work out, well, how do I make money and scale to consumer fitness? And you kind of, what do I strip away? And this was the opposite, where it's like, okay, well, we built this device for consumer fitness, and people like me in elite sport and the NBA bubble and a bunch of others are like, this is a really cool, valuable device. And so it was hardware and software, my sort of three reasons for coming. Hardware and software, like, both were really good, and that's pretty rare. Number two was like just the opportunity to impact so many people. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's cool working with some of the best athletes in the world, and you know, it's cool to help people get on the podium, but I'm helping people who are 99th percentile before anyone in my team ever came near them. And you make differences, and hopefully I did over my career, but you're only impacting on, you know, a relatively few of them. And so, but the impact of something like Tonal in tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, hopefully eventually millions of homes, that's a kind of ego boosting way of like, I could really impact on a lot of people. And then the third one that I really got excited about, because I'm a geek, but is the data. Those users, anonymously, Tonal captures every single rep at 50 times a second. So you've got things. So we just passed, I think, 194 billion pounds lifted, 35 million training sessions, 6 billion sets. Like, the numbers are just at 50 hertz, 50 times a second. So you start thinking about the future and artificial intelligence and machine learning and what you can do with that data set. I'm like, I still get like goosebumps now. Mm-hmm. That's like cool. We could really transform training. Still an opportunity. I think we have an incredible device and still there. Still, you know, it's incredible as it is, but the future of what it holds is even more exciting for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that you nailed it by taking this top-down approach. Like, so many things come from elite sport or elite science. And I think I've said this certainly on the podcast, but one I think that most people can relate to is Formula One, you know, driving car technology gave us ABS brakes, which we all know and rely on in our cars. And you think like, well, how did that, maybe we would have come up with that, maybe not, but it was like privately funded money through the sport, through the high level sport that got toned down to everyday use. And the same thing happens with fitness and every other kind of thing. And so it takes someone like you who's been at that top trying to squeeze out that last 0.1% out of the world's best athletes to then say, okay, how can we make this usable for the dad at home who needs to lose 30 pounds so that he can, you know, not be pre-diabetic, get off some medication, be there for his kids, and really like change that guy's life. Like, that is a 100% improvement in that man's life versus the 0.1% change in a high-level athlete. And that's, you know, speaking to the ego and the change and the real positive impact that we can have with fitness. That's why I think most people eventually kind of transfer into the consumer fitness or general population, right?
Yeah, the magnitude of impact can just be life changing for people. We see it in the official Tonal community, our Facebook community, or various messages come in. But yeah, people who are pre-diabetic or like really frail, people in their 60s and 70s that were, you know, struggling. I was going to have to sell my home because, you know, I couldn't walk up and down the stairs, and can have an impact on that. It's like, that's, you know, I'm 45 these days. I'm physically active still, but my parents are in their 70s. You're like making those sorts of changes for people is really cool. It's awesome. It's a huge ego boost for me, but it's just really impactful for the product and being able to impact that and impact that at scale, right? Not one-on-one personal training, but being able to do that at the thousands of people level.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And the whole impact or impending impact of AI on the industry, on fitness, maybe we'll get into this a little bit later because I want to talk about some of the technology of Tonal, but I think it's going to be an overwhelming positive. Some people will lose their jobs, bad trainers and bad coaches and stuff, but like there's always going to be that want or that need for the human interaction and the human element. Like I can't sit here and pretend that I'm better at exercise programming than a computer that's taken the data of, you know, whatever it was, 6 billion sets of, like, I can't do that. And no one can do that. You're silly if you think you can. So I think it'll overall improve things, but we'll get back to that.
We'll get back to that. Cause I agree. I think the future might be fully exclusive, might be hybrid, might be fully personal training, but I think there is going to be a blend of that. And it's really about how people use technology, not whether technology replaces them.
Yeah, it's a tool, and we've got to figure out how to use it and implement it. Can you tell us then a little bit about some of the technology that is in Tonal? Like, what is it? What makes it different? What makes it useful and unique?
Yeah, so I think at the heart of it, rather than lifting iron, right? There's a mass, and you're lifting essentially against gravity. And even in a cable machine, there's a stack of weights that are going up and down with various pulleys. The force or the resistance is generated by motors, electromagnetic. The closest like thing is from going combustion engines to Teslas into electric cars. Like it's an electric based resistance profile, and much similar to Tesla and ludicrous mode, you can do lots of cool things with motors that you can't do with resistance training or can't do with traditional training. And so not that iron weights are bad and the, you know, everything that Tonal does is amazing. It's not, and I'm not here. I am on a sales pitch, but not only because I love the product, not because I necessarily need to do that, but like, once you can manipulate the resistance, you have sort of two options that I think are really cool. Number one, it's a closed loop system. So we can prescribe weight, we can monitor your performance, and we can modify in real time. And so, you know, if you think about that, okay, I'm lifting, I've got a resistance in, oops, are we in kilos or pounds?
I know whatever the audience, but
I got 100 kilos on the bar and I'm squatting 220 something, 25 pounds, or whatever it might be. I'm like, oh, I'm failing. Well, an algorithm can just peel the weight off. You don't have to have a spotter necessarily. And that's an algorithm that we have in there. So there's this sort of closed loop system that allows you to kind of modify both within a rep and between reps, I think is really cool. And then the back on is the long-term data. The sort of point two is the long-term data about tracking progress and what progress people are making. Like we can prescribe weights, we can monitor progress, we can progress people around there. So that's sort of the heart of the technology. And then you layer on top of it things like, okay, well, it's behind me, but like there's a TV screen. We can load workouts on. We can do coach-led workouts. We've got a mobile phone app that has like computer vision, so pose estimation models. We can monitor the length of the cables and give you form feedback. So if one side's, you know, asymmetry, we can identify. So you can start identifying all these different pieces and do something about it and give you information, whether it's a coaching cue or a change in the resistance profile over time. And it's pretty small, attached to your wall. And so it doesn't take up a lot less space than probably more traditional training does. So really cool, innovative piece of kit.
Yeah, as far as logistics, it seems like it doesn't take up that much space. More or less anyone would have space for this in their home. I mean, if you're living in a small condo, you know, it's hard to have anything in your home. But it doesn't seem like
fitness is important and you struggle not to make the space.
Correct.
Yes. Yeah.
It doesn't seem like there are too many limitations either in the amount or types of exercises that you could do, because the arms slide up and down. For anyone who's not watching on video, and you can see, I mean, go on the Instagram or on the website, but the arms slide up and down and then they rotate like in and out and angle up and down. And so with that and with the handles, the rope, the bar attachment between the two, I struggle to think of an exercise that I've got to imagine there's got to be something, but not something that like really anyone needs to be doing. Nothing essential that you'd struggle to do.
I think the arm positions, there's like 240 variations of the arm positions. You can go up, you can go down, you can go out, you can go in. And so in the movement library, like the standard movement library that we provide, there's something 250 something moves in there. And the other thing that I tend to show a lot of my Instagram is like, you can just get a carabiner and attach anything. So like, I can do sled drags. I can do all these other, like I can create a landmine and correct it to a, like, you know, all these other things that are not, I would say, part of the core experience, but yeah, it's almost, the versatility is kind of awesome just because you can get very creative. And so it stops, like, if you get boredom from training and things like that, you know, it's like squat, bench, deadlift, or whatever your normal plan is, that's great. But sometimes you just need to do something else. And it's kind of a really versatile option for that.
I want to talk a little bit about the way the resistance works. And I think this is super interesting in light of something that is somewhat trendy in the fitness social media world, is there's been a big shift to this optimal movement focusing on hypertrophy, which has some of its issues. And I don't know if you're following it or not, but regardless of that, people are now starting to understand, and we've talked about it on the podcast many times, that intensity is more important than the amount of weight that you're lifting. So it's not
intensity
necessarily...
Intensity as in proximity to failure.
Correct. Yes. Thank you for clarifying. So it's not important that I can necessarily squat 100 kilos. It's important that I can squat with proximity to failure. So if I can start the set with 100 kilos, but after a few reps, like I'm kind of breaking down, but I can still squeeze a couple more reps out of me, and the machine can drop me down to 90 kilos or 94, well, you know, whatever. That is super interesting, because that's not possible in the gym. Even if you had training partners stripping off the weights, like, it's not possible instantaneously. It's a huge logistical challenge. Like, that is very, very interesting from a training efficiency perspective.
Yeah. Like, I'm not the biggest guy in the world. I love the hypertrophy research. I work with Brad Schoenfeld. He's like the Mr. High, or Dr. Yep. Hypertrophy. And we've got some research studies in that space. And yeah, I think it's really interesting. Like, you know, the primary driver of hypertrophy is mechanical tension. I think that's generally kind of a thing, is whether it's the only exclusive, and whether the pump, or let's not go into the nitty gritties and we'll get ourselves in trouble with at least some influencer if you go too far into that. But mechanical tension being dry there, like close proximity to failure, whether it needs to be to failure or whether 1, 2, 3, 5 reps shy of failure, you know, there's maybe a slight dose response relationship based on Zach Robinson's meta-analysis that came out fairly recently. But like being in that range of close to failure is super important. And so like, as I think about it from the home, it's really hard to do. Like I resistance trained at home before I got a tonal. I've got a squat rack like in my home gym behind, and I still do use it. I'll be honest, it's only about 10% of the time I probably do, but there are days where I still just want to bench and squat.
Yeah.
But I can't go anywhere close to failure on squatting. I'm in my home gym. Like, my wife may or may not be upstairs. if I get stuck under here, that's bad. More than just a fail video, I'm not getting out of here.
Yeah.
And so what do you start doing? You start training like 6, 7, 8 reps from failure, or at least 3 or 4 reps in failure. So I stop making gains, at least hypertrophy gains. I can probably still make strength gains training that far from failure. But I start working for further away from failure. And so there's that piece, just naturally, you know, having something like spot. And then there's this, like, let's call it advanced training techniques, but this, we call it burnout mode, which is essentially where we monitor velocity and a few other metrics as you're moving. And once you start to slow or stop, we peel the weight off 1 pound at a time until you start moving again. And you can do that 2, 3, 4, 5 times. It's tough. It's intensity for a reason. Yeah. But you can get a ton of effective reps really, really in a really short period of time. You know, arguably you could get a single set and get the same amount of stimulus maybe as 3 or 4 traditional sets. I think that's TBD. I don't think I have, you know, a research study that I could pack that up. But at least in theoretically, you're getting a ton of stimulus very close to failure, which is pretty cool. And when you do finally fail, the weight just peels off, or there's a Bluetooth button and you can turn the weight off.
Yeah, it logically makes sense, whether it's, you know, perfectly described in the research or not, or will be found, who knows. But
we'll find that out.
Bro science, real science, it's kind of all, you know.
I will make that a project that we will get done at some point.
There you go.
But yeah, if you believe in that theory of mechanism of hard or soft effective reps, but reps close to failure are important and we can accumulate those. And I think if you look at the drop sets research, it generally says drop sets are just as effective as traditional training, not necessarily more effective in the way that they are. And then that kind of also lends credence to this idea that you can lower the resistance profile to maintain it. So I think if you buy into that, it's not a big stretch to think that this might be a really, really effective way of training. I think Josh at Data Driven Strength did a YouTube video. Josh Pellard, he's doing his PhD at Florida Atlantic University, but on burnout and the sort of the science behind that.
Yeah, another thing with that is it's also safer. You're not dropping any weights. You're not like you don't have to be there. There is an art to how to, you know, bail out of a squat, bail out of a bench press. Like you got to know how to do that. But with cables or with any machine, really, like you don't have to. You can kind of just let go and it'll slam and you'll make a fool of yourself and people will look at you. But like you'll be safe and you'll be fine. But the same with tonal is like if you really get to that failure point, like the weight will it shut off automatically? Will it notice that or will it just you'll just let go of the cables and how does it work?
Yeah, it will shut off. Essentially, what will come on is spotter will kick on and it will just basically instantly switch the weight off. Or there's Bluetooth buttons and you just push one of them and it goes from 0 to 100 pounds or 5 to 100 pounds per arm. So you can go back down to 5 pounds immediately. And so, yeah, it'll do that automatically, which is kind of nice. And it's also the sort of types of movement varieties that you can start doing this training. Like, I always think of like bench pressing and squatting and things like that, but you can now start doing this on like, I don't know, cable flies. When was the last time you did a drop set or like a thing of cable fly? I don't think I've ever done it until I got tonal. And so you can kind of do these different resistance profiles or these different kind of movement patterns that you would never normally train in this way. Yes, everyone's done a run the rack bicep curl. Or most people I'm probably sure have, like most guys at least. But you can start applying that same kind of pump training, as it were, to some high mechanical tension training to a bunch of different movement patterns.
Yeah, it exposes people to different or more advanced maybe training methods. And in a way that you wouldn't necessarily do that in a real gym, or it would be difficult to do that in a commercial gym. One, just because like, you know, you can do the run the rack when you're in a private gym or in an athlete gym where you guys have the whole gym.
You do that Monday night in Good Life or Planet Fitness or somewhere. Probably not going to be the most popular person in the gym.
Exactly. Plus even just doing drop sets, you're taking up all the weights, you're taking up all the things, even trying to do like eccentric training where you're counting, you know, a 5 second eccentric on the, like, that's a lot of counting. You're counting the seconds, you're trying to make sure your form is good, you're trying to do all this stuff. But when the machine can kind of do all that for you, like, not to talk myself out of a job, but like that's kind of what a personal trainer does. Like, I'll count the reps, I'll count the time, I'll make sure you're doing the format, I'll give you what you need and nothing less, and make sure that you're doing all the things and introduce you to these advanced training drop sets, eccentric training, you know, whatever, all these different things. But if someone can just kind of count that stuff for you and you can do that at your home for like a way less of a cost, like that is a massive, massive advantage. And I know that you said, I don't know how much the unit costs. I'm sure it's not cheap per se. And I use that with heavy air quotes because I don't think anything with any fitness devices, I don't actually think that they're expensive. The cost of being sick, the cost of being unhealthy, the cost of being weak is way greater than like, you know, a couple thousand dollars plus a whatever membership per month, you know, to your health. But it allows you to do so much more than you would be able to do on your own. And I think that's really the take-home message of all of this technology.
Yeah. Like it's not cheap. Like, you know, I think, again, you have to compare to what, particularly here in the US. If I'm comparing it to medical health bills because I have sarcopenia, it's probably the bargain of the century. But yes, it's $4,000 US and $60 a month subscription. So, like, you know, if you finance it, it's like a high-end gym membership, right? It's going to cost you $100 a month all in, something in that kind of range. It is an investment in your health and your future, a worthwhile one, I believe. But obviously, that's up to every individual. There's an investment to it. And related to sort of the modes and that sort of the training that you can do I still fundamentally believe there's a role for personal trainers, but it might not be counting reps anymore, right? It might be some of more the kind of piece. But the advanced training techniques, I like them from an optimization point of view. It's like, I'm doing everything I can to get the most muscle mass. Like, the way that I train scientifically, I should be on the Olympia stage. I'm clearly not. So there's more that goes into that than training. Yeah. But actually, more than the optimization stages, I have a really strong belief, and I programmed a lot of training sessions on Tonal now. My team has programmed, like, I think it's 35 million training sessions. It's been that, like, insane number. Variety to keep people cognitively engaged, I don't think can be underestimated. I would... Mm-hmm. I don't think you should randomize progressions for progression's sake or randomization. I don't think that's effective training. But people crave variety. The average gym goer, average person looking to get strong and fit, like, four times 10, you know, times six exercises straight set. Yes, that is the most effective way to train probably. But if you only do it two times and you're like, yeah, I ain't doing that session again, then what's the point? You're not going to stick to it long enough to make any changes. And so I actually like those modes like chains mode or eccentric mode, or we have something called smart flex mode, because it adds variety to the exercises. Now, I do it in a ton of my programming. I do lots of like 10, 8, 6 and a back off or something like various things. It's all hypertrophy training. It's all close proximity to failure. I think the stimulus is equivalent, probably no better than 4 sets of 10, but it's more engaging for the people to do. And I think that variety piece is, I certainly, as particularly in Olympic sport or professional sport, where, you know, basically I can say anything and they'll do it, like within reason. Like, you know, they're very committed people to achieving their goals. And if you say this is the best, they'll follow you to a T. But I probably didn't appreciate it. I could have made their training a much more interesting and cognitively engaging for them if I bought the variety that I've learned from programming for the general population. So I think there's the optimization element of, yes, it's the maximal stimulus, but there's also this, hey, this is fun to do. It's interesting. I enjoy doing this. I don't like, there's this like slash familiar, you know, it's familiar, but it's also kind of novel at the same time. And I think being able to combine those two is pretty powerful.
Yeah, it's just novel enough to keep someone engaged and keep enthusiasm high and keep you wanting to come back. And when you like it and you're having fun, like you're more likely to work hard at it. And that's where you're going to get more results. And this is where kind of like the science and bro science kind of mesh. And it's like, okay, we know that this is not necessarily exactly true, but it helps me stay in the gym and work hard, and that's the thing that I need to be doing. So it's like, hey, does anyone need to be doing drop sets and using chains and using accommodating resistance and using, man, probably like not, but you know, people like you and I can probably squat, bench, deadlift, you know, 3-4 times a week for the rest of our life and never get bored. But most people are not like that.
They're not gonna do it.
And that's what, you know, keeping people in the gym and keeping people fit is about. And so even that alone is good. Now you did mention one thing is, variety is good, but too much variety can then be detrimental. So one thing that I did like that I saw that Tonal offers is guided programs. So it's not only individual workouts. There are month long or 6 week long. I don't know the time. I'll let you talk about that. But like you can start a program and it'll last for a few weeks progressing. So that's a really good addition as well. That is, again, different than I think a lot of consumer fitness, you know, highly scalable products.
Yeah. Where we started, and Ali, our founder, and he's our CTO, you know, was like, I want to replicate as best I can a personal training experience. I'm not trying to replicate Peloton and just have people in that's fine. There's nothing wrong with their business model. I'm not knocking them in any way. A lot of Peloton people have Tonal and vice versa. It turns out we're relatively complementary products, but like was to build it off programs. So there's 300 and they're generally 2 to 4 weeks, mostly programs. And then we can progress them. We actually just ran a big project. We have about 5,000 workouts in total, if you added all of our workouts together. John and Jacob, two of my team, along with a bunch of data scientists, just essentially coded the training stimulus for about 7 different training effects. So hypertrophy or max strength, or let's say work done as a proxy for getting lean, or functional fitness, like base of support and things like that. So coded the entire library with like a number associated with this outcome. This, I don't know what you're going to get, but this stimulus that you're going to get, exposure to training. And so, yeah, you can progress. So you could do, yeah, there's 300. So what's that? Like, you know, 6 years worth of training that's on the system. Now, not every workout will be appropriate for every person, but we add about, I don't know, 3 or 4 of those a month on average. So this is expanding movement library. Yeah, because in a lot of those programs, what we tend to do is like we call it an AABB. We'll do 2 weeks that's the same, and then we'll modify like 1 or 2 progression of an exercise for the second 2 weeks, or progression of a rep range. And between in the AA weeks, we might add chains 1 week to give you a slightly different stimulus and a slight change there. But we modify some of the exercises. Sometimes we keep it the same exercises for 4 weeks, because 4 weeks is not a huge amount of time for skill acquisition, particularly in something like a beginner program. We're trying to keep movement patterns, but we'll adjust the rep ranges as you go. So we give you a slightly different kind of training stimulus. So lots of programs. And yeah, I would say it's a tricky balance between variety, novelty, and just randomization. And where do you play on that line is tricky, but I think not that hard to do if you approach it with a thoughtful that I want to add variety, but I don't want to add so much variety that I'm hurting skill acquisition or I'm training ridiculous for some particular reason, like have massive increases in volume from week to week or changes intensity from week to week, more subtlety. We tend to keep in that like 10 to 20% change kind of window and play around with that space.
There's enough variety that you can add to make it feel different or appear different, but not really be different. Like maybe changing a grip slightly or changing a rep range very slightly or a rest time or something that's like not really change the stimulus, but enough. But you mentioned skill acquisition. Can you just talk a little bit about why that's what that means from an exercise perspective, why it's important and why we need to do that in order to progress as best as we can?
Yeah. Exercise physiologist, not skill acquisition expert, but I would say I spent probably about 10 years of my career diving into this space. It's like most strength and conditioning or physiology, like you have your core expertise and then you start kind of branching out into other areas. And I got really fascinated with the skill acquisition kind of piece from an elite sport perspective. And how do you develop expertise? Like, how do you develop skills? What's the best way to do that? My brother's a principal of a high school. And so like teaching in a learning environment, like in an academic environment versus a movement environment. But like, you know, at its heart, I think what we're trying to do is get people to move in as many ranges and planes as possible as they need to do for what's functional for them, right? I'm not an Olympic gymnast. I don't need to move like an Olympic gymnast. My members mostly are not Olympic gymnasts. They don't need to move that way. But what's a range of movement patterns that like a strong, robust, healthy person needs to be able to? I need to be able to squat. I need to be able to lunge. I need to be able to hip hinge. I need to be able to press. I need to press overhead to put my baggage in. Like, what are the fundamental movement patterns? And how do we make sure that we're building those into our programming and giving exposure to those at the appropriate level, the challenge point curve, like the inverted U of like, if something's super easy, it's kind of boring. And if something's super hard, I fail all the time. And so I'm trying to play in that sort of optimal window zone of movement challenge and having programming that progress there, because most of our members are like middle-aged, 30 to 50-year-olds, like are interested in their health and fitness, have some generally resistance training background. There are a bunch of beginners and there are a bunch of older people, but the core of that, like they want to move well for the rest of their lives, right? Mm-hmm. And then we want to help them do that. We challenge them with resistance and we're quite a challenging platform. One of the reasons we get such big gains is we have some algorithms that constantly progress you, but we want you to do that when you're ready to do that. And so building in a lot of those fundamental patterns. So we'll do a lot of like, if you're into skill acquisition research, but like traditional training, like block practice, I do, you know, the same movement pattern again and again and again. Varied practice, I'll move from one pattern to another. Now, I can't do that. Like, you know, I don't do one rep of a lunge and then one rep of a, you know, overhead press, but I do a lot of supersets. And I do that from a training efficacy point of view, from just time efficiency. Mm-hmm. But I actually think it's a nice variation of sort of variable practice from the skill acquisition research. You know, we think a lot about the way that we cue and the form feedback that we give. You know, whether we're thinking about performance orientated kind of outcomes, if we're trying to help someone reach a new 1RM, I'm much more likely to try and give them an external cue, right? Drive your feet through the floor, push to the ceiling, some external object and the skill acquisition. If I'm looking for a hypertrophy mind-muscle connection kind of thing, then I might be more internally focused on the squeeze and there might be some research there. So sort of kind of bringing in these sort of adjacent sort of science topics into a general consumer fitness program.
Yeah. I mean, it all comes down to being good at the things so that you can do it well. Yeah. If it's the first time you've ever squatted or done a lunge and you don't see it again up on your program for 6 weeks, like, well, when you do it again 6 weeks later, you're still not going to be good at it. Yeah, exactly. And you're just never going to really start to progress at it.
You've got to have enough exposure to things to get learning. And we do a lot in our particularly in our beginner program focus programs, we just Actually, I don't know if it's released yet. I get myself in trouble in this. But if you're on the Tonal Platinum, there will be an intro to power building coming up. And so we've had this power building kind of workout. So it was hugely popular with one of our coaches, Joe. And we're like doing an intro version. And it's very similar. Everything's scaled back volume-wise. But you've got more repetitions of practice in there so people can learn the fundamental movement patterns before they move on to a more advanced version.
With the AI and the coaching aspect of Tonal, is there a way, and maybe it's not possible yet, but I'm sure it'll come in the future. Now, the machine can detect the velocity, length of the cables, and these kind of things to detect speed of reps and effectiveness of reps, maybe. Can it also see you and say, like, hey, you're leaning over to the right, your knee is coming in? Like, can it watch you and give you feedback and those kind of cues? Is that a thing that's possible?
Yeah. So we have an app in our Tonal app. It's called Smart View. And so you set up essentially a perpendicular your phone camera, and it will project your image onto the screen. And then it runs pose estimation models on your movement patterns. Wow. And so like, hey, you had a bit of knee valgus. Maybe that's normal movement pattern for you because of the way you're anatomically designed. But yes, we can identify movement patterns. I would say it's a space we've played in. It's an awesome product. It's a place we will continue to evolve on. But yeah, there's pose estimation models. So you can work in that in terms of there. So set up a side on camera and you can see your image over there. And then as you finish and end the set, if you've got any form feedback that uploads, I got one today, so I know this. If you've got a form feedback, it uploads the image, the video onto your phone so that you can review it after the fact.
Wow.
So you can look through and you're like, I really do, squat a lot when I'm supposed to be deadlifting or whatever the sort of particular kind of fundamental movement pattern issue is. So that's in there already and certainly a body of work that we continue to advance upon.
That's super, super interesting. Because I mean, most people, you think you're doing something right and you're like, I'm not getting the effects of this, and you don't know what you're doing wrong. That like, you might know that you're doing it wrong, but you don't know how to fix it.
How to fix it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's huge. So then
so we have queuing in there, and actually that's a tool that a lot of we have a number of personal trainers, like you can do our programs kind of things, but there's a number of personal trainers that program for their remote clients on there, and they'll upload those videos and send those videos to their coach.
Very cool.
So they can get like an even more detailed type of analysis and queuing and kind of specific things. So
I might have to get this for some.
This way that AI can be a tool for personal trainers rather than necessarily a direct replacement all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. How are you guys using all of this data then that you're collecting? There's so much data that's being collecting. What is the tangible effect other than, knowing that it's been done?
Yeah. So like there's tons of essentially machine learning algorithms that are built in there from the way that we progress weight. I mentioned earlier, we're quite aggressive. I'd say aggressive is probably the wrong term, but we know when you're ready, even if you don't necessarily feel like you're ready. We have enough data and I have enough confidence in our data that James Steele did a research paper in 22, he's at Southampton University. And he basically said, like, he showed that the average person in the gym does 10 reps with 52 or 3% of their 1RM. So they lift with 10 reps from reserve, in 10 reps from failure, 10 reps in reserve, roughly. No wonder the average person is not making a lot of gains.
Yeah.
You train 10 reps from failure, you're probably not getting a lot stronger, and you're probably definitely not putting on any muscle mass after your first newbie gains. And so that's what the typical person is doing. So one of the machine learning algorithms is we identify, hey, you were lifting with 50 kilos. I look at your speed, your velocity, your power, your kind of things. It runs a bunch of AI algorithm, ML learning algorithms on it and says, hey, you're more than 2 reps from failure. We can do 51 pounds next, or 51 kilos next time, or 52 kilos. And so it's kind of built in this progression. So you're always pushing relatively hard. There's also a recovery weights mode. So you can like, hey, I need a down day. I'm not feeling it. Even if last session was great, I still need to back off. You just hit recovery weights and it'll give you 80% of your normal weight. So you can kind of get a bit of a breather. So that would be an example of one way that the data is sort of informing the product. Another way would be a lot of the recommendations that we do are based off machine learning algorithms. So the base, I think about this as a pyramid because it's how we think about everything. But the base of that is like, hey, Troy, you told me you're like an advanced user, you want to build muscle. Okay, well, what do people like you like? Because I've got hundreds of thousands of users and they've done a lot of different sessions, so I can recommend that. It seemed to work for them and they really liked it. So there. Now I know, okay, well, you're 45 years old. And you've got, like, we have this algorithm called strength score, which is basically an approximation of all of my 1RMs for every lift that I do. So people that are like your age and the same level of strength of you, here's layer two. And there's a little more specific. And then layer three is like, you did this last time. So based on all of this prior data and what you've told me, the top of the pyramid is you should do this next. Or these are two or three options. You know, you could do a bit of a deload week. You could like do an intensification week, or you can do another accumulation week. And you can kind of dial it on there. And so you kind of build up from relatively general to very specific based on recommendation algorithms. There's a bunch of others, particularly in the way that we suggest weights. That's one. It's called suggested weights. But essentially, every time you lift on Tonal, you're telling Tonal what you're capable of doing. And then we feed that back to you for what lifts you're doing. And we can do it between moves. So if you did deadlift, I can tell you what your squat 1RM is based on a machine learning algorithm. Yeah. I can't, but the Tonal can, and my data science team, I could probably give you a good estimation of what your bench press is with a relatively high. It's kind of crazy, but once you have that much data, you can kind of map it real well.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, lots of ways that we build in.
It's funny that, you know, as you're saying all these things, it's like, oh yeah, that's kind of like what I do and what my colleague trainers do. And I never thought about it that way, but it's like, we do a movement assessment and it's like, okay, just show me a body weight squat. And from that alone, it's like, you can gather a ton of data and you're making some assumptions and some estimations and whatever, but like,
your ankles aren't that flexible.
Right. But it's like, if this person can't really do a great squat, I can also safely assume that, you know, they probably can't bench press 100 kilos. You know what I mean? Like, you can, I might not know exactly, yes, but it's like, you can make some smart inferences that way. And so all of these things, and this is, I guess, what we would call the coach's eye. And you see things, and you see the speed of a reps, you see the mood of a client, their facial expression, how they slept, the argument that they had with their boyfriend or their girlfriend last night, and all of these things. And it's like, okay, this is what we need to do today. We need to ramp it up. We need to, you know, calm it down. That set was too easy. Let's get a little heavier weights. Like, we need to change this setup in the exercise, but it can do all of these things. And it's so amazing to me, because this is what, like, I think people, this is what is missing from people. I think people understand that they need to work out. Anyone listening to this podcast, if you don't understand by now, I can't help you. Yeah. But like, you understand it by now.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's millions of people who still don't get it. But among those who do understand they need to work out, there's a lot of people who try and who don't experience any, basically no benefit other than the very minimal, like, surface level stuff, which is still good. But they want to get jacked, they want to get bigger, they want to get leaner, and it's just not happening despite them putting in that effort. And it's just this kind of level two knowledge and that you'd get from hiring a coach, using a program or a technology like Tonal to be able to do. And now with AI and with the technology, it's just going to become so much more accessible. Like, yes, it's expensive. It's way cheaper than hiring a personal trainer for 5 years. And I'm saying that as a trainer, like, it's going to cost way more than 4,000 plus $60 a month or whatever it was. Like, that's nothing in comparison.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's a lot of that. And that's where my team sort of intersects with the data science team and the product team. It's like, we're all basically coaches and trainers from background. It's like, what the things that we would look for that we would be interested in, like, and how Tonal solves those problems is somewhat different to how I, as an experienced coach, might solve them. Unless I've got a gym aware or a tender or push or whatever it might be. I don't know bar speed, but my eyes can tell me it's slow or fast.
Right.
We just, like, we can got a different way of inferring that. Yeah. And so there's a lot of those sort of the core technologies that we develop are really based off, hey, this is something that we would tell a client when we were working with them. How can we get close? Sometimes we do better, like the bar speed. We measure that better than anyone because it's everywhere at rep and it's perfect to do. And it's actually measured, I don't know what the motor measures at, but probably 4,000 times a second. And then we just downgrade it. Like, it's higher. And there's some things we do better. And then there's some things where we're like, okay, well, we've got a solution. It might not be absolutely perfect, but it can help you. Like, you know, the movement screen and your squat. Like, I can tell you whether you had ankle flexion or not, but I can't tell you why. Right. I can't get manual and tell you around those. And so, hey, it might be, hey, go see a physical therapist or kind of things, or try this cue. If it works, it's probably more like a neuromuscular sort of patterning type kind of issue. If it doesn't work, then maybe it's structural and this is just the way that you're built. But yeah, there's a lot of it's kind of just built off what would a trainer want to be able to do, and what can we kind of already get out of that data?
Yeah, I'd imagine, you know, you sit down in a room to think about this and you're like, how can I replicate myself, or how can we replicate ourselves as much as possible? Because personal training is by definition not a scalable endeavor. Like, there's only so many hours in a day. You can only talk to so many people in a day. Like, that, yeah, that's it.
But that bit is real tough to scale.
Yeah, yeah. But it's also the most important. Like, the least important thing that I do is the programming and the rep, yeah, counting. Like, that is, yeah, nothing. Like, we could just almost not even do that.
The human interaction, the relationship that you build with the client, that all of those things that technology has a harder job feeling that. Like, there's elements of connection to online coaches and things, but not in the same way. And so, yeah, it's really about, for personal trainers, it's really about, like, how do you leverage this to make you more efficient, right? You're not, if you don't have to spend as long programming, then I can see more clients. And if my program's not any worse and potentially even better, that's a win-win for me. Or, you know, typically, I don't know, you know, maybe I wasn't the best personal trainer when I did this, but I'd see clients for like 6, 8, 12 week, lots of sort of 12 week block type kind of training. And then I got it. I know I was expensive. And then I go off and do it. And I'm like, well, I was seeing them 3 times a week. Maybe if I only saw them, say, once a week, but they got training on tone or something like that twice a week, they'd stick with me for a year. And I'm pretty sure I'd make more changes in a year than I would in necessarily in 12 weeks. And so, yeah, it's really about, like, the efficiencies that you can get out of that type of kind of space.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what I do now in that is, like, I'll have clients who will stay with me for 2, 3 months in person and then transition it. And it's kind of said from the beginning, transition it to online. Cause, like, now you don't need me to hold your hand anymore, assuming there's no injuries, and there's some clients like that and whatever, of course, but, like, then it goes into something different. But it would be nice to still have the ability to monitor things a little bit better using something like Tonal versus just getting a you know, check-in text and a call every couple of weeks and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so some of the things, like, just like tracking data, volume lifted, power lifted, like they're all, like, you can do it manually. Yeah. It's a pain in the butt. Like, it stores it, uploads to an app. There it is.
Exactly. So where do you see this integrating as we go into the future? And there is, you know, Tonal is more widely used, or other AI coaching kind of products, because there's got to be this human element is still valid and needed. And I think we've established that Tonal can probably, if not already, very soon in the future, will be just as good, if not better, than certainly your average personal trainer, which your average personal trainer, it kind of sucks.
Not a high bar.
Yeah.
Want to be dissing in a field, but it, unfortunately, the proof is there that it's not.
Exactly. Average personal trainer, not very good, but whatever. Separate conversation. So it's gonna beat all the technical aspects, but it won't beat the personal, the personality and the personal relationships. However, people are doing this alone in their home, and there's a Facebook group and a community and all this stuff. But how do we mesh that? Like, hey, I just want to go to the gym and, you know, see my gym buddies, so I don't know their names and I fist bump them, and, you know, we see each other every now and then, and, you know, slap on the back, and that's it. Like, how do we mesh these things, and how do you see these things progressing together?
Yeah, and so I see a world of opportunities and a world of, there is no one solution that fits all. Like, you know, at the start of the pandemic and whatever, CEO, it's the demise of the gym, and, like, everyone's going to train from home. And, like, you know, then a year later, like, no home gym fitness equipment will ever, like, then people have got different lives and different things and different stages of their lives, different stages of their training, different levels of priority. And so I do really see that, that there will be this, all options will be available, and some people may take advantage of all the options and some people may stick into one. But if you think about a continuum, it's like, I work from home. I have a home gym kind of thing. I got 2 kids, like, relatively young, a busy wife. Like, I don't have 2 hours to go to the gym multiple times a week anymore. It doesn't happen. Like, mm-hmm. I cannot do it. I would like to train.
And you're someone who loves the gym. It's not like a challenge for you compared to most of the people.
Unfortunately, I managed to put home gym in so I can get to train where I work and kind of there. But for Tonal, like, even, yeah, I say, I've got a squat rack, I've got kettlebells, I've got adjustable dumbbells. I train 90% of my time on Tonal because I don't really need a ton of additional help. I'm relatively knowledgeable in this space, and I really enjoy working out on the product, all those novelty features. And so there are customers that we will be the sole solution, and that's perfect. And we, you know, they don't never need anything else. Then there's this second bucket, I think, in my mind, of, like, people who, like, they need or want, miss community element of some levels of training, but also have busy lives and don't really have the ability to that much time, but they can spare it once or twice a week to go to the gym. And so they're there, and then once or twice a week, or whatever it might be, they have Tonal and they train at home, and they can kind of get their pieces done. They might work with a remote trainer when they're there, and they might program when they're not. But there's this kind of hybrid kind of things, and actually quite a few of our members do that kind of experience in that, hey, like, yeah, it's motivating for me. Like, it's International Bench Day on Monday, and I want someone to see that I just hit three plates or whatever it might be and go. And turns out Tonal is really good for training for free weights because it works on your stability. Right. But there'll be this kind of hybrid environment. And then there'll be people that'll be fully in the gym and won't ever want to train at home and to do those. And that right now, like for us, we work and we have some, like I would say, commercial light installations. More boutique fitness or not personal training studios, but certainly not big box kind of, you know, mass market gym kind of things. Our equipment was not designed for that level of wear and tear. And no, right. But we certainly have a number of people that use our device exclusively in, you know, the hotel gym membership that they have, or whatever it might be. And so we have some commercial things or in their workplace gym, we're in corporate fitness and those types of places. And so then they'll be using in those kind of environments. And then, yeah, sometimes they buy it for the house, sometimes they don't. And so I think those are the sort of the three right now. As we progress into the future, maybe at some point we'll have more commercial level devices. I don't think anyone doesn't want the data on the modalities and the things that electromagnetic resistance can provide. It's just finding the right form factor, price point, and experience that works for maybe more commercial settings. How does it work in that kind of things? What's the right form factor? What resistance profiles do you need? But like, you know, I would imagine if I made a Tonal bench press machine that could do eccentric overload and chains simultaneously, by the way, and give you a spotter so you don't look like an idiot in the gym when you stack, it's going to be fairly popular on Monday night at 6 o'clock. So I think there are environments. It's just the market dynamics of figuring that stuff out of what my thing. So I wouldn't say that's an immediate step for us. I do think you'll see in Europe, I think it's eGym is a company that's doing more in that. They have some digital resistance stuff that's more commercial focused, like selector size equipment, but replacing the weight stack with motors. So I see electromagnetic resistance becoming more and more commonplace in pretty much anywhere where people do resistance training, just because it's got so many advantages.
If you simply replace every existing cable machine with an electromagnetic resistance, like it's the technology will probably improve very quickly to make it more durable for commercial use, and then it's just providing more feedback. And people go to the gym with the phone, the way, you know, maybe 10 years ago we used to go to the gym with your little notebook to write down your sets. You go to the gym with your phone; it's tracking all your stuff and whatever. But the way that I see this, just to add my 2 cents in it, is that I think something like Tonal, or specifically Tonal, it makes the whole pie bigger. Mm-hmm. Like there are so many people in the world, and we kind of get stuck on like this competition within, but I think within fitness, you know, our competition is against the couch and potato chips, and like that's the real competition. You know, if Tonal gets into 100 million American homes or American people, like that is only a third of the American population, never mind the rest of the world. Like there are still plenty of, like everyone has a body, everyone needs fitness, everyone needs to strength train, like all these things. And so if it gives access or gets people training who wouldn't otherwise train because they didn't love group classes, they didn't love going to the gym on their own, they didn't love or couldn't afford or couldn't whatever a personal trainer, all the other existing options.
We actually see a bunch of people that are like, hey, I always wanted to get fit, but I never had the self-confidence, and it can be an intimidating environment, right?
Yeah.
We see a lot of those members and exposing that reach. Yeah. Like I think, I don't know what it is in Canada, but in the US, I think CDC, about 30% of US guidelines self-report, 30% of US adults self-report that they meet the guidelines of muscle strengthening exercises twice a week. It's not a lot.
Yeah,
it's a low bar. I suspect people are lying that they're actually getting that much.
I was just going to say.
It's still not a big percentage even with those things. So yeah. I think, yeah, If we can do our part to increase that, and particularly with more with, like, you think about aging populations, the mm-hmm. boomers, people like myself, Gen X, that are getting older, and the costs of healthcare in doing that, and like lifespan is increasing, but health span is not. And I think there's overwhelming evidence these days that strength training is probably the most important thing, or one of the most important things you can do for maintaining health span and independence. Like, your ability to get out of the chair is not a cardiovascular exercise. Right. It's a strength, because right. of a power exercise. In fact, it's force over time. But yeah, those types of opportunities are like the real exciting future if we can work out how to do that.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. It's just going to make it better and more accessible for more people. Last question on the product before we kind of wrap it up is, and I was thinking about this before, and I know that there's talk of this on the website, and it was interesting to me because, like, as self-proclaimed gym bro, it's like, oh, the machine only goes up to 200 pounds. Like, what am I going to do with that? Talk about that a little bit.
So it does go up to 200 pounds, only 200 pounds. When you lift with a free weight, so you're putting inertia, you get the bar moving, and then the bar has inertia on it. And so that's essentially giving me free lift. And that's how we can Olympic lift, right? You put a bunch of speed on the bar and the bar still goes up while I can go down. Not with my technique, but I've seen the Olympians do it. But you're putting that. And so your 200 pounds actually feels much lighter than 200 pounds at various different points along that movement. Electromagnetic essentially resistance has a much flatter resistance profile. So you don't have as much inertia. So we ran a research study out of High Point University to kind of understand what that feels like, the difference was. So we had a bunch of, I think, 15 or so people that went through, and they did three different exercises or four different exercises, and they did it on free weights and they did it on tonal, and we compared both their sort of their estimated 1RMs, I think from a 3 or 5RM, if I remember correctly, on the two devices. And we also measured some EM, surface EMG, muscle activity. I'd say the surface EMG is, it's probably not the best measure of it.
It's something, yeah.
It is something. But the essentially what the 1RM estimation shows, that it's around 20-25% heavier. So your 1RM will be 25% lower on tonal than it would be in the gym. So if you're benching or squatting 250, that's about 200 on tonal. And so it's not, if you're trying to get into a powerlifting competition, it's probably not for you. I will say, 90 something percent of our members never max out the device. And a portion of those do it one time. It's like, it's pretty heavy.
I think the stat on the website I was looking before was it was under 4% of users have ever maxed it out, and they've only done it a couple times.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's come up now, because the other thing is we get people stronger. So that number, every time we run the stats another year and more people have done it, not highly frequently. Like, I'll be honest, I can deadlift 200 pounds and I can deadlift it for about 8 to 10 reps. And it, it's solid. But as we were saying before, my goal is not max strength. Hypertrophy, if your window for hypertrophy is 30-90% of 1RM roughly as a training zone, it's definitely well within that kind of range for someone like me who's relatively strong, not a powerlifter by any stretch of the imagination.
If you're powerlifting, like, go powerlift. Like, you don't use any machines, like, just use a barbell and don't do other stuff, and that's it. But that's a sport, that's not like a regular training regime, right?
Pretty much. Every sort of like young 20-year-old gym bro comes into the retail store, it's like, I want to bench 200. And you're like, let's bench 100 first, see how it feels. And most of them can bench 100, and they're like, that was pretty heavy. Yeah. And you're like you go 135, which is not like, I'm back into pounds, but 220 kilos on a bar at 135, it's like, I'm getting pretty close to my max. And like 155, not many people lift above. It's just heavy, because there's a stabilization element with a cable too, but it's just inertia. You don't bounce it off your chest. It's you're pushing all the way through. I actually find my triceps fail. I never had tricep failure on bench press before, but I get tricep failure on tonal all the time. Because I'm so used to locking out, just pushing through, and I've got momentum carrying me up, and now I have to push through the entire rep. And
plus, it's still somewhat unilateral in a bench press. Well, I guess if you use the bar, but it's probably still more unilateral. It's more similar to dumbbell bench pressing than it is to barbell bench pressing.
With the handles, with the bar, it's It's more similar that honestly, it's just a skill acquisition thing.
Yeah.
Because of the way the cables attach, like you'll see a lot of people the first time they shake.
Yeah.
But once you get that movement pattern, it's very, very similar. It's just a skill acquisition. It's the stable state, my shoulders, it's shoulder stabilization that is really what people train. But yeah, it's just because I always like used to put speed into the bar and then I would finish it out. And so my triceps never really got much of a workout on bench press. And now I got like, I get three quarters of the way up. I'm like, I can't finish it.
Yeah.
Squatter kicks in and helps me out.
There you go. So if you've been listening to this and thinking everything's great, but you think you're too big for this, you're probably not. So
yeah, give it a try. You're probably
yeah.
not.
Yeah. We went this whole podcast without even talking about LeBron James, but Troy, is there anything else that you wanted to talk about today?
No. LeBron's good. Still trains on Tonal. Mike Mancius is his coach who I work with. He's kind of there. So yes. No, I think that's pretty much everything. Yeah. It's just enjoyable to chat to you. I really appreciate sort of diving into some of what we're doing over here at Tonal.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's been super interesting. I'm always interested in the whatever's up and coming in fitness and things that can, again, grow the pie, right? AI or not, new technologies, it's all good. It's all good stuff. Get more people moving, more people fit. And that's the name of the game. What is the Tonal website? Where can people go if you want to direct them to your personal pages? Rattle all that off and I'll put it all in the show notes as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, interested in Tonal, www.tonal.com is the thing, and you will probably see LeBron as a hero feature or the sort of the star athlete that's shown there. Our Instagram, Tonal Instagram, has quite a lot of like member stories and more like real world stuff. Lots of our coaches and our programs go up on there. And then my personal Instagram is Strength Science Troy on Instagram. And I share actually mostly in my Tonal workouts, but some evidence-based fitness, some latest research that I find. Things that we're working on around that kind of thing. So those are probably the three best places.
Awesome. So Tonal.com, Tonal on the socials, Strength Science Troy. Troy, is there any last message that you want to leave the people with here in closing? Any message about anything?
Hopefully you love working out in Tonal. Hopefully you just love working out. Strength training is good. We should do it more. Definitely do that. Whether it's on Tonal or anything else, I'm a huge fan of people continuing to resistance train.
Beautiful. Love it. Thank you very much for your time, Troy. I very much appreciate you and looking forward to see, you know, Tonal's continued growth. Thank you everybody for listening. I appreciate each and every one of you. Go outside. Be a good person. See you next time.